What if Forest Park catches on fire?
I think we do need to beef up our emergency management and response capability. But my take as an economist is to say I would much rather prevent it. And I think that there are things that we can do to make the risk of a fire in Forest Park really minimal. For instance, I think the greatest source of risk is unsanctioned camping and people creating fires for heat and that sort of thing. And I think the way that you deal with that is you provide adequate housing for everyone so they don't have to live in a park. The next thing you can do is one thing that I would like to champion, this is probably not an immediate thing, but a kind of a longer haul thing, is to say, why don't we have a green climate core, job core in Portland? And so you can go out and do proactive ladder fuel. That's like, you know, ivy that grows up trees and, you know, kind of quick burning stuff. Like let's trim that out. Let's do some proactive forest health maintenance in that area, that precious area of our city. So that way we can keep the risk low. Those are things that I care about. And, you know, frankly, instead of joining the Army, I would have preferred to join something like the Green Climate Corps if that existed. To pay for college. So I think that there are things that we can do. We don't have to sort of accept this world in which we're going to have to react to disasters.
What are you learning in this process about the office you want to hold that you didn't know before you started running? What do we who are voters don't even know about this town that you've been learning because you've been walking through this pathway?
I mean, that's a really interesting question. For me, what I have learned is just how deeply embedded our past decisions at the budget level, at the programmatic level, are in terms of creating the kind of like boundaries today. And so, you know, when we think about all the policies we want to pass and how to pay for it and what are the trade-offs, you really get a close-up look to the consequences of a previous generation's choices. And that's why it's extremely critical, I think, to have wide participation in this process and to kind of really open up and democratize the knowledge and the accessibility there, because I think that we've maybe made some poor choices. And
you know. What are people asking you about when people are really angry and they're showing up at your stuff?
It's different variations on this theme, which is like, I pay a lot of taxes. I have voted for these taxes. Why do we still see the problems? Why is this pothole not filled? Why do I see tents on the street?
Mitch, what's your take? 10 years from now, what is the biggest issue that we're not really tracking now that's just going to blow up?
I think we are tracking this, but I don't know if folks recognize the urgency. It's a two-sided coin here. It's the lack of abundance of housing and also our transportation priorities. If 10 years from now, if we don't change a course and do a dramatic increase in the scale of housing production and you know, frankly, maybe look at some rent control, and take another stab at that, then we are going to have a situation where people who do move here, who are in earlier parts of their career, cannot afford to stay in the county and raise a family. And so you're going to have this big suburban commuting issue. And so we've really got to make some pretty aggressive investments in dense, walkable neighborhoods and really straighten out our transit system. And we've got to do it fast.
What kind of law enforcement or emergency services structure do you support? This is what I want to ask you. When a significant natural or social disaster hits within the city of Portland that brings significant infrastructure to a halt, which first responders do you expect to be there doing what? And what will local resident volunteers be expected to do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, if we've got a natural disaster
or social disaster,
I would prefer to see non-armed public safety officials show up first, whether that's Portland Street Response, whether that's the firefighters or, you know, public safety specialists, EMTs and those sorts of people trained in de-escalation, but people who have a basket of skills that's not just shooting at something. To me, that is how you get people to calm down. I have worked, you know, I was a soldier, and I have some experience in conflict zones, and I know that to develop order and safety, it takes rapport building and a light touch. And I think if we're going to have a social disaster, I think that sort of alludes to riots. It alludes to sort of that sort of thing. I think policing your way through that is not the approach.
What do you see as the future of neighborhood associations in Portland? What do you think?
Yeah, just real briefly, I think neighborhood associations will continue to be an important way that people engage in civics. You know, it's usually how people get their first touch on politics in a city. I do think that they tend to overrepresent homeowners at the expense of renters. So I think that I think it's incumbent on leadership. So those of us who get elected should do our best to try to steer those associations so that they're a little bit more accessible, represent a broader set of views.
Okay, here's another question from Doug. What do you think about police having to walk a beat in the neighborhood they're from?
Well, most police don't live in the city of Portland. But, you know, to do justice to the question, I'm not opposed to walking a beat. I mean, I think that's better than sitting in a car.
This is a hard question. This might even be our last question. Elliot in Northwest Portland says he was on the non-emergency phone line with police on hold for 2 hours about a garage break-in and no one got back to him. Is addressing that response time important to you?
That's a huge priority for me. It's pretty intolerable. You should be able to call a number, get someone to answer very quickly. A non-armed officer, public safety specialist, should be able to show up, take your police report so you can fill out your insurance claim. It should be painless.
Okay, last quick question. Do you support expanding Portland street response or not?
Yes.
What's the most important thing that voters should know about what you're going to do if you get your hands on the wheel?
What you should know about me, the single takeaway, is that because I am an economist, if I'm on city council, I'm going to be able to call BS on any claims that we cannot afford to invest in our communities. And I'm also going to be able to sort of champion different ways to approach our budgeting process so that way it is not so expensive to live here. And we can make this a city that can weather the storm and be resilient and build sidewalks.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. I'm Althea Billings, the news director. In this episode of KBOO News Year in Review, we're revisiting Running on Air, our Portland candidate roundtable series from the election season. We're hearing from winners of District 4. That's Mitch Green, Olivia Clark, and Eric Zimmerman. Consider supporting the important work we do at KBOO with a donation during our Catalog of Connections drive. We're aiming to raise $75,000 by the end of the year. Can you help us out? Donate online at kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321 to show your support for grassroots community radio. If you've never donated to KBOO before, now is a fabulous time to do it. Join us, kboo.fm/give. Let's get back to the show. I have in the studio with me Eric Zimmerman. Welcome to Running on Air.
Hi there. How are you?
Good, good. Starting here, why did you decide to run for city council?
You know, I think that Portland over the last several years has had a pretty tidal shift in a way that a lot of Portlanders are pretty upset about. I think that we, over the last 2 years, have at least pointed the city in the right direction, but the work to kind of restore the faith of our residents in what the city can achieve still demands work from elected officials, from city workers, and ultimately, you know, I was born in Portland, and so the future for Portland, to me, it's very personal, and I think that's a good reason to get into a race.
You are running in District 4, which covers the whole west side of Portland, plus Selwood-Moreland. What do you see as some of the most pressing issues for this district?
You know, I think our district concerns are very similar to what a lot of Portlanders across all districts. Homelessness, camping, and public safety are front of mind for almost every Portlander this election. That's what we know. How we want to tackle those issues is where some differences exist. But, you know, for District 4, it includes downtown. And anybody who's been paying attention knows that downtown has gone through a tremendous influx of open-air drug use, rampant bad behavior, if you will, as businesses and others left. And so we've been really trying to revive downtown. Those kind of things are very front of mind. The other thing about District 4 is that not all neighborhoods understand this, but District 4, since we're the most urban district, we're the district that has a lot of parks that families don't go to anymore, right? The kind of things that go on in our parks are not the kind of things you would take your kids to. So we're very much aware of that. You know, my district has both some of the wealthiest census tracts and also some of the most impoverished census tracts. And so we've got some disparities between, and shared interest between that I think is very front of mind in how we make sure we represent every part of the district. You know, it's easy to talk about this district as just the west side, but Eastmoreland, Westmoreland, Selwood are a huge part of the district. They represent a ton of folks who are also dealing with cleanliness, public safety issues, and overall livability.
Yeah. You have made a career in government. You're currently the chief of staff for Multnomah County Commissioner Julia Brim Edwards. You've been the deputy city manager in Tigard. You were Mayor Wheeler's central city advisor for a time. You've seen it a lot from that experience. What are the roadblocks for our community getting things done? You've been on the inside.
I think that the biggest roadblock was our old form of government, right? Five fiefdoms is how our city was set up, which meant five groups had to negotiate whether or not they would work together. One of the experiences as a deputy city manager in a couple of cities in Oregon that really helps me frame up my opinion about that is that as a deputy city manager, departments all worked for me, right? One executive and then to the city manager as well. And so that pyramid of effort is how almost every city in America gets stuff done. Portland, for a long time, has decided that that didn't work for us. And so we have overcome that. That's really
we like to
great.
Be weird.
We have lived with capital weird on that situation. But I think it's really important because the city council is entrusted to make decisions that meet the needs of the public. And in the cities where I've been a deputy city manager, what I know is that when city council took an abrupt or a serious change of course, those were okay. And the way that we tackled that challenge as departments and as senior managers is that the very next day we brought together every department. So when you go to tackle something like public safety, I think everybody would say you cannot tackle public safety with police alone. You've got to tackle it with other complementary services, even if police are maybe the lead. That's very hard in our system today. I think that we're moving into a system where we will see that. We'll have a city manager and a mayor who are leading all the departments and who are able to accomplish everything collectively, where streets, parks, public safety, rangers are all complementary to one another, no matter what the topic is. And that is very, very important for every city in America, and Portland's going to finally get that in January.
Let's move over to community safety here. Eric, you've supported expanding Portland Police's neighborhood response teams. What would that look like, and why do you think they're important?
Yeah, I think, so not everybody knows about neighborhood response teams, but I think a lot of people have probably interacted and not realized that that was a neighborhood response team. So we have, of course, the officers who take 911 calls. Those are our patrol officers. And while we have a lot of challenging in increasing those ranks as well so that we can respond quickly to emergencies, we also have an important team in each precinct called the neighborhood response team. And these are officers who work day in and day out, but they are not taking the typical 911 calls. So they're not just going from one crisis to the next. Most Portlanders have heard of the term, at least, of community policing. Mm-hmm. Our version of that, in a lot of ways, is the neighborhood response team model. They are the teams that are able to deal with the most entrenched issues that are affecting a neighborhood, criminal in nature, but not emergencies in nature. And so when you think about prolific graffiti issues, our chop shops, where you, if you go by a homeless camp and you see 35 bicycles, nothing illegal is happening there when it comes to that. When we talk about drug rings, you know, we set up in downtown a couple of holiday seasons ago, I helped set up the retail theft task force. The officers that worked with the neighboring businesses and to get into that work, those are neighborhood response team officers. So I think Portlanders value community policing a lot. I think that these officers, in a lot of ways, are solving the livability issues as they are related to crime that have gone unaddressed for too long in Portland. Each precinct has one neighborhood response team that's about, it's a leadership position with a few officers. I think that as we grow our ranks in police, I'd like to see that double. As we are able to bring another patrol, some of our more experienced officers or officers with deep roots in certain areas are able to step into more of an NRT model. They are a great example where when they need the assistance of another city bureau to get their work done, that it's a very natural connection. So if they need parks to take up an active role in something, if they need PBOT to help them close a particular road, the NRTs are doing that in a planned manner instead of a very responsive manner. that I think neighbors are really feeling the benefit from. A couple of examples, the Central East Side reset that I led for the city a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. The NRT was a presence. In fact, a lot of the residents were even able to get quicker response from those officers who are in the area based on cell phone numbers instead of 911 numbers. Mm. And also it helps alleviate the 911 system with calls that are not truly emergency calls. And that's been really helpful. For instance, I'll give an example. Our officers, and it's been covered in the media, they went after a very prolific tagger who was causing tons and tons of damage to places. And when they went after him and finally stopped him, they found a whole host of other illegal activity that this person was involved with. That was never going to be a 911 call because graffiti's not really, that's not what that is.
Right.
But they attacked a situation that was having a lot of harm on a neighborhood and then found that actually this person was involved in a whole host of other far more serious crimes as well that I don't know that they ever would have been able to find but for the NRT. So they are having a huge impact across the city. When we talk about community policing, we are generally talking about neighborhood response teams. And for the leadership of the police bureau, these are the teams who can go tackle the really tough stuff that there's no clear answer to.
Is it your opinion that, you know, these livability issues that we're talking about, that police should be the primary responder to those?
No. I think that when you're talking about livability, there's an aspect that's public safety. There's an aspect that is behavioral health. There's an aspect that's related to trash and camping and all those types of things. But what we have seen is that by trying to just rely on Multnomah County to take care of the mental health situation in our community, by not having Portland involved from our bureaus that are able to help, we've fallen flat. And I think that's where we're at for the last several years, is that Multnomah County is clearly not able to take care of all of the behavioral health issues that are existing on our streets, the addiction issues that are happening on our streets. And so it's interrelated. I am a firm believer that none of these get tackled by one entity only, that they do have to be worked on, coordinated. And at the end of the day, there are a whole lot of folks who the help that they need is actually addictions treatment, mental health treatment, sheltering. It's not the one single criminal act or petty act that occurred. It's the other stuff that's contributing to that. But every now and then we do have a really bad actor and police do have to be part of it. And I actually think Portland has split those duties fairly well. I don't think our neighborhood response teams are overly penalizing folks. I think they're actually seeking out a whole lot of other options like services, shelter, referrals to drug treatment, way more than they are handcuffs in jail.
Where do you land on Portland Street Response and the expansion that a lot of people are really calling for?
Yeah, In fact, last year over at the county where I work for Commissioner Julie Berm Edwards, we actually had proposed funding the rest of PSR with joint office funding. Mm. That wasn't successful. The commission didn't end up passing that. But I think that signals a direction that I would like to see PSR funding go. The public's expectations of PSR is that PSR is going to crisis situations, that they are helping de-escalate a situation, and then doing something with the person that they are interacting with. And I think that's a huge misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're not able to transport a person to a better location, a better situation. As far as I'm concerned, it's a gaping hole in our service model. And really want to fix the transport model. And I actually think it is a value proposition for the PSR model to show its worth to everybody involved in the community who has a vested interest in this. And I say that because you may be aware that we've been working on a sobering center at Multnomah County, and the city is a part of that effort as well. We used to have a sobering center in Portland until 2019. A lot of people have referred to it as the drunk tank. It was kind of set up just for alcohol. It closed because when you combined the types of drugs that we have today and alcohol in that same situation was unsafe for everybody. But what has occurred is we've gone 5 years with no place for people to go that are deeply intoxicated, whether it's drugs or alcohol. And a lot of these same folks also have co-occurring other crises going on. Jail and ERs are the only option besides staying on the sidewalk today, and those are not good options. The sobering center plan that's been released by Commissioner Berm Edwards and the work that we were doing includes a transportation model, an in-house transportation model, but we also said PSR is a huge player. If PSR encounters a person on the street who the best option for them is sobering, which we think is actually going to be a number of the people that they interact with, mm-hmm. they should be able to transport to a sobering center that will be a safer place where overdose doses will be reduced, and where some basic care and monitoring for a person in crisis can occur.
Well, I want to one more aspect of this that I want to touch on. Recently, Street Roots published extensive reporting that documents that the Portland crime wave that some people have really decried as a big problem is more of a ripple when you look at the numbers. It's just not borne out by the data. With that in mind, where do you think this perception of a lack of safety in Portland, where does that come from?
So I haven't seen the article you're referencing, so I'll start there. But I am familiar with the disagreement about whether or not we have gone through a crime wave or it's just people kind of overreacting. And what I would say is, having worked to try and start the recovery for downtown and the rest of Central City in late 2022, I'm not going to get into the business of telling a bunch of people who were coming to work every morning and seeing broken glass and other terrible things at their front door that somehow they weren't experiencing some level of crime, right? Mm-hmm. What I think has happened is that what we used to call petty crimes now are happening so frequently to a lot of people, it's hard to say that it's petty when it happens to you once a month, right? Mm-hmm. And so break-ins, vandalism, graffiti, really terrible kind of antisocial behavior that people experience on the street is something that all kind of goes together, and it leads to a perception. I think that we have years ahead of us to overcome that perception if we're going to send the signal that Portland is cleaner, Portland is safer, in a sense of when you feel that you're on the street, if you come to a show, if you're a suburb person or you're a visitor for a conference, you go to a show, it was a good experience when you left that show and you walked back to your hotel room or walked back to your car and there was only good experiences. I think that helps with this perception. I'll talk about Old Town. I helped expand and kind of empower the entertainment detail from the Portland Police Bureau that we put in Old Town. And that neighborhood went from one of the most shootings neighborhood and because it's one of the economies that really came back, the nighttime economy really came back, but it also became a very dangerous area for a while during those club hours. When we introduced the entertainment detail and we closed those streets to cars and we made it a pedestrian zone for the evening times on the weekends when people were out, club goers were out, that neighborhood went from tons of shootings to no shootings almost overnight.
Eric, what do you think needs to be done for this energizing downtown that needs to be done?
Well, I think the best way for us to energize downtown is that we improve the experience of anybody who goes downtown, whether you're a worker every single day, whether you're a visitor, and whether you're a resident. I think that experience then ripples into the community about perceptions. I think it ripples into the community about what it was like. And so then you are more likely to go to dinner again in downtown. You're more likely to go to a show. And those experiences are incredibly important. So a couple of things that have happened, and I think they should continue, is, you know, TriMet has hired somewhere above 200 new security folks who you probably have seen around platforms, on buses, on trains. That's super important. Prosper Portland, when I was in City Hall, we had to expand their budget for the Broken Glass, Broken Window Fund, where Prosper would sponsor or pay your bill, basically, if your windows got smashed in and you were in Portland. And those small businesses, that is a huge deal. If you think about so many of the small galleries, the pop-ups, et cetera, a $10,000 bill every couple of months is the kind of thing that puts you out of business. I think city workers and other companies are continuing to bring employees back to office because there is a world where hybrid is our future, but entirely remote is not working for the city. It's not working for a lot of businesses. And incentivizing and making a good value proposition for employees who are coming downtown, who are going to spend their time there, who are going to work with their teams and go to lunch during the day, I think that also improves. We want to see foot traffic in downtown improve. Foot traffic relates to so many other activities, and downtown, what we've learned about the way Portland was designed decades and decades ago is that, you know, the Pearl District and South Waterfront and other parts of the Central City recovered at a higher rate after the pandemic than downtown did. And we credit that in large part to the fact that downtown has fewer residences who are there after 5 o'clock. I've always believed that mixed income neighborhoods were the healthiest neighborhoods. I also believe that mixed use neighborhoods are the healthiest neighborhoods. And that is a future for downtown. A lot of people wanted to say, hey, you just convert all the commercial buildings to residential and that will fix our problem. I can assure you that is not the magic wand. It is part of it, but it is not very, it's not a very simple process, and it's not a process that is going to in every situation for Portland, because most of these buildings, it would be more cost effective to tear them down and build residential than it would be to convert.
That statistic always boggles my mind.
It does. And it's also incredibly environmentally impactful, right? What we have done is, I know a number of landlords have been approached by the city and by Prosper and by the business chamber for the free rent or severely reduced rent just to get ground level retail up and open. Downtown is an area that we have spent my entire life investing billions of dollars in where our transportation goes. We've got our living room at Pioneer Square. We've got all these things that go and they centralize so much of our culture. I don't want to give up on it. It's right. A big deal to me. Revitalize downtown, Rose City Love, whatever we call it, I'm on board.
Well, I'm going to pivot us here. Over the summer, KBOO surveyed our listeners to find out their priorities for the election. The one that actually came up the most frequently was the climate crisis. So I want to put that to you guys. Is this a priority that you share? And how would you shape Portland's approach to the climate crisis going forward? Let's discuss this. Your thoughts on what Portland needs to do.
Yeah, I think, for me, the way that I want Portland to make sure that we're a sustainable city. A city is the right place to be dense, meaning that our impact is up instead of out across land that should be protected. I'm very much in favor of that. As the person running to represent the central city, I'm in favor of doubling the height limits in the central city. I'm in favor of making it easier and more affordable to develop larger properties so that we can get folks housed, that we can be a community where a family wage job can actually live. And I know that those are not the normal climate talking points, but I think they're very important for a city to take on, because if you're talking about climate protection resiliency and you're not talking about, and you're a city and you're not talking about how you're going to be a dense city, then I think you're missing the mark in a lot of ways. We've come a long way over the last 20 years, transitions away from certain types of fuels to electric. That is important stuff, but it can be complemented by building infrastructure and codes that meet the mark and also are complementary to the smaller actions like transitioning away from certain fuels. Those together are a huge impact. Getting into CEI and into what it affects our district, huge concern, huge area. And I'll just note, I spent 17 years in the Oregon National Guard. In that role, I have been a person who has responded to emergencies. So the CEI hub has been on my radar for quite some time. Mm-hmm. What I am looking at is today, we need to do everything we can to make that hub safer in how things are stored and safer in how things are transported to and from. And tomorrow, we need to be doing everything we can to find it a new home. Being on the river in a liquefaction zone is not just concerning for District 4. It is concerning for folks downriver in St. Helens, Warren, and Scappoose. It is concerning for people across on the bluff in North Portland in District 2.
I mean, if it goes, it goes all the way out to Columbia as well.
It goes, right. That changes shipping for an entire region. That changes access to water and access to fish and access to everything ecological across an entire region. If fire is involved, we will have the largest urban forest fire in the country. And so that's why today I talk about safer and tomorrow I talk about relocating. There is probably no group in this election who has made a better advocacy campaign than the Linton community and the Tank the Tanks community. They've made it very clear to all of the candidates about the seriousness that they take this situation, and I hear them. Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to an encore presentation of Running on Air, KBOO's Portland Candidate Roundtable series. We've been hearing from what the future city councilors from District 4 told us on the campaign trail. Tune in for all of the episodes of KBOO News Year in Review now until January 1st. I want to give a special thank you to all of the KBOO folks who helped to make Running On Air happen. Thank you to the hosts, Lenita Duke, Barbara Bernstein, Don Merrill, Corey Elia, Annette Newell, Lisa Loving, Sam Bowman, and Reed Johnson. Thank you to the editors, Eric Leuschner and Ray Bodwell. Thank you to Ender Black, Arthur Rosado, Bob Davis, Nate Kapp, and Asia Hawthorne for jumping in to help. I also want to thank KBOO interns Patches and Alex. None of the important work that we're doing here can happen without the support of amazing, amazing volunteers. But it also can't happen without the support of listeners like you. If you've appreciated KBOO this year, consider supporting us with a donation. It's our end of year membership drive, and it's a great time to do it. KBOO.fm/give is the place to donate online. You can also text the word KBOO to 44321 or mail us a check. We love getting mail. Our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. I'm Althea Billings, News Director here at KBOO. Thank you so much for being with us, and see you next year.
Hi, this is Ray Lynn, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people